So, if you're listening to this podcast, thank you. I appreciate it very much. Prestige Performance has been nominated for an award at the Sports Podcast Awards 2023. It's up for the Best Performance, Fitness and Wellbeing Podcast. I am up against some fantastic podcasts such as Jay Comfrey and Damien Hughes, the High Performance Podcast. So to even be in the conversation is pretty cool. If you're feeling sound and you feel like voting for me, the link to vote is in the description of this podcast. What you need to do is click that link, create an account, sign in, scroll to the Best Performance, Fitness and Wellbeing Podcasts. Look for this podcast, Prestige Performance. You're clicking the thumb to vote and then scrolling back up to submit your vote. Cheers. Welcome to Prestige Performance, a podcast where I speak to athletes, coaches, psychologists, and individuals involved in live performance to find out some of their secrets in achieving high performance. This is episode 56. This week, my guest is a singer-songwriter from Clonmel, Rory de Lester. Rory has been writing songs and performing live from a young age. He has shared the stage with acts such as Duke Special, Lisa Hannigan, Jerry Fish, Five Vance. He was described by Duke Special as a beautiful songwriter with some set of pipes on. Rory, welcome to my podcast.
Thanks very much. I must go back and I must go update my bio. It's been a good few years since I've gone at that.
Some cool names there, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Most in Clonmel too, some elsewhere and abroad and stuff. But yeah, Clonmel's given a lot to me.
I know you a long time. We've never had an in-depth conversation like we're probably about to have. So I'm looking forward to it.
Same.
Tell me about the de Lester name, the origins of your name. Where does that come from?
It's more like a proud Irish grandfather. It was actually kind of like Lester. Then, you know, to say like a Burke or a turn to De Burke or whatever that, like that kind of way, you know. So it's not as interesting as some people might think that going off to Norway or Italy or whatever for De Lester, an old origin, it's actually just Lester and then Irishified.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Your dad is an artist.
He is. He's an artist in many ways, painting, sculptures, essay writing. He puts his hand to a lot of things, but mainly I'd say that he's more a painter than most other things, you know.
Is it fair to say there's always been a creative influence around you growing up then?
100%. Like from a very young as I can remember, my older brother and him built a studio up. So I'm from up on Sheep Lamont, the foot of it where my family home would be, still is to this day. And my brother and my father built a studio, which would be like, you know, 50 yards from the house itself where he'd always go up and doing his painting. So I actually kind of saw like him going doing not just a 9-to-5, much more than a 9-to-5 in terms of hours, very regularly and always working and putting out a big workload, good work ethic, you could say, from seeing him do that. So yeah, I think there's not much music in my family, but the influence of that kind of arts was definitely big on me, you know, definitely a big influence.
You mentioned work ethic. Is that a trait that was imparted upon you from a young age that you've taken on in life and in music as well?
I'd love to say that it was, but I feel sometimes yes, sometimes no. I think sometimes, especially when it comes to the craft of songwriting, where it can be difficult to kind of push yourself into it, there can be long, as most songwriters will tell you, there can be long spells where you're really not giving as much time to your craft as you really should be if you want to be really pushing yourself to your limits and your abilities.
You mentioned the craft of songwriting. We will move to that later on. Tell me this. How did you get involved in music, first of all? Where did that initial interest come from?
So there's probably a few different avenues I could probably go there. As I said, there's never been a whole much. There's not been much music in my in my family, besides, you know, brothers and sisters listening to music, a lot of, say, hip hop from my brother from a very young age, and a lot of like different music then from, say, my good friend Christoph Thieben. His father would have been David Thieben, who was the creator and director of the Clamel Junction Festival. So from, I'd say we were about 12 years old when we started working on that every single year for like 15, 20 years, you know, I was working for a long, long time. And you come across, there's so much African music and all these different things from the start, from like 12 years old, you're seeing all this amazing stuff that's kind of mind blowing, and circus music and all this kind of stuff. But what got me into guitar and learning guitar and writing songs from the age of 12 as well was probably my cousin, a guy from Clamel called Brian O'Sullivan. He started playing guitar, and I would have been very close to him too. So we started, I got a little guitar, and Bud was kind of started together, even though he was a little bit older than me. So I kind of looked up to him a bit in that way. So that kind of encouraging to get me to practice a good bit. I want to be as good as you. I want to be as good as someone else, you know. And then eventually I kind of like, just after, very quickly, I kind of fell in love and took it my own way, you know. But he would have been the initial interest that got me started guitar and songwriting.
What were you writing songs about when you were 12? Can you remember?
Ooh, I've still got books and books and books of them. Yeah. I have like loads of them. Yeah, some stuff is incredibly embarrassing, but it's brilliant. Like, you know, it's like 12 years old and you're straight into writing first chorus of The Sky Is So Blue and all this, like, you know. And I was just writing and writing and writing, and that's where the basis of my kind of work came from. Like, as you said, we'll get into songwriting later, but yeah, that was the start of it. That was like a real bug. I've really do have reams of books of songs, and that some stuff is actually quite interesting when we look back at it. But even to this day, same as when I'm writing right now, the majority of it would be kind of crap. You have to just keep writing and writing and writing. But even back then, some stuff is actually not too bad. You come across the odd gem when you're looking back on the old stuff.
Funny you say that. I was just thinking that there, writing songs myself. A lot of what I write is crap before I eventually stumble upon something that's some way good.
It's always the way. Everyone has to go. We all go through that, you know. And I'd say only the rare few will ever be, if even that. I suppose if someone, you look at someone like Paul McCartney or Paul Simon, their crap is probably our gold then, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, probably.
The greats of the greats.
Hey, talent boy. In terms of musicians or albums, is there one that you can think of that really would have influenced you growing up?
There's a few. The first two that jump into my head as you say that would be, it's cool. David Thieben, I think he helped with the distribution or something like that of Damien Rice's album. Oh, so I actually had that album even before it was going out there. And then I was just listening to that album every night for so, so long that I could still to this day remember it all perfectly, you know. And then Mick Christopher's Skylarkin would have been the other one. The two of those would have been probably two of the main ones that were played on repeat at night time when I often used to just lay in bed and listen to music when I was younger.
Two absolutely amazing albums, to be fair.
Yeah, they were. They were too, and that's, you know, to kind of young teenager, very, very, very. I was influenced a lot by it. I really, really was. And there are so many other albums by loads of more Irish singers and American singers, some English, even some African albums that really did have big influence. But those two are probably two of the biggest I could think of now that were in my melding years where my brain was being melded into what it is now.
Do you remember the first time you performed live?
My first gig, proper gig, I think, really was the two things. There's two kind of first gigs. There's if you remember, there was a kind of Africa Live thing in was in the Irish school in Clonmel, So it was about 500 of our peers and older, because I was 14, I think it was. And we had to play two songs for a competition. I played two originals. Not too long after, I had seen Foy Vance do a gig with a loop pedal. So I went in front of all these people, so unbelievably nervous. I remember even one of my aunts giving me a little bottle of Rescue Remedy, because I was like just panicking, not wanting to do it before, like a couple of hours beforehand, being so incredibly nervous, knowing how many people were going to be there. And then, I remember I won my category, got like a 50 euro voucher, and everyone was like, oh, so brilliant. So that was a massive bug of affirmation from people to be pushing into it and telling you, go for it, you know. And the other one, as I said, there was two. The other one then makes me think of Lonergan's, when Bess and Trevor and Rob and Wes used to be running the place. They had me in there supporting, it was Rob Strong and Andrew Strong's father. I think, yeah. I was in my first paid gig where I was paid to go in and be support for someone. I think that was it.
I played Rob Strong. Why did I play Rob Strong? I can't remember.
Yeah, you told me that before, actually. Yeah, I remember that. I
was down in Mourns, and there was a guy called Anton Morelli playing lead guitar, and he was amazing. He was making the guitar talk.
Cool. And I can't remember if Rob was on his own or not now, but that name does also ring a bell, so possibly could have been there too.
And Rob doesn't even need a microphone, does he? He has some set of pipes on him.
Incredible. Like, he's incredible. You can see where Andrew got it from.
Yeah. You mentioned you were nervous there, naturally enough. Do you still get nervous, Rory?
Depends on the gig. You'd always get somewhat nervous to a degree, but like when you're doing your own stuff, 100%. But I can go into I do so many kind of cover gigs and stuff as well to kind of make the money and pay the bills. Not that I don't enjoy them a lot of the time, but there are times where I know exactly how the gig is going to go, and I'm so used to it that it can almost be like autopilot. So I try not to get into that state too much. It's not a very good state to be if you're trying to perform and perform for people and have them happy and entertain them. But sometimes it can just happen, unfortunately. And in that state, sometimes I don't think nervous is the right energy for describing that kind of a gig.
Mm. You've obviously experienced both. You've played solo, you've played in bands. What do you prefer?
Well, I always prefer to play my own stuff at a gig. That's first and foremost what brings me the most joy. So in terms of playing original gigs, I think it's doing just thinking of gigs in the past. It could either be a two-piece gig with me and maybe a lead guitar, something that can kind of fill out the sounds and make you feel a bit not less vulnerable, but more enjoyable to the audience, I think, if you know what I mean. I do like that intimate one-to-one thing, but there's something about where you can have a full six-piece band behind you, or even one or two other people with you. It makes that experience, one, sound better overall, I think, and two, there's a nice camaraderie to being able to share the stage with someone as well, you know.
Yeah, and I think when you're sharing the stage with someone, you know, you buzz off each other as well, I think, don't you?
You can get yourself through it. Like much more for a cover gig where you playing with someone can actually help you get through the gig. Like, you know, if it's a tough gig, like you can just mess with them. And if you're on your own, it could be quite a lonely place. But then I wouldn't really say that so much about original gigs, because I wouldn't really put myself in that position for original gigs. I save the original gigs for where I know it's going to be usually a good gig, or people will be up for listening to it, you know?
Yeah. A listener question here. What's the most difficult thing about being a musician?
It's a difficult thing. I suppose financially speaking is I've worked myself into quite a good position, where I'm nearly 2 decades playing gigs. So I've worked myself up into where I have, I have these good residencies and I have gigs that are good money. And but even at that, it took me quite a while to get there, and I am more wanted to step back from that a touch, and I want to push my original music more, which means that my plan is probably going to change a bit. I think I'm going to look for something kind of part-time midweek, so I can actually do less of these cover gigs and then push my original music more, and then see if something kind of happens with that, which kind of goes to show that the hardest thing is probably financial stability, because I'm literally going to have to, not just because of that, a lot of other reasons behind that too, and I kind of want to do something else as well at the same time. So it's not just purely for those reasons, but being a musician on the up 100%, you'd have to say, kind of financially speaking, would be tough. Maybe as a just a typical gigging musician, there's two is like a great there's good and bad to it in terms of lifestyle, where you could we are going out and playing for people, and the same times when all our friends are going out together, so it is people do look at it as that's brilliant, you're going out, you're playing music, and sometimes you can have a few drinks while you're playing too, which is great, but very often, more often than not, I would drive to a gig, then I'll drive home afterwards, and it hasn't been a case of I'm going out having brilliant fun with all my mates, but it's more you're going out, well, your mates are going out somewhere else, and you're performing, and then you're making your money. But so it's that kind of trying to work that balance of, obviously it's a great lifestyle too, because as I said, you can have a few gigs with some pints, and you can enjoy the crack that way too. So it's a balance of that kind of lifestyle. I wouldn't say it's the toughest thing now, but it's just something that came to mind as well.
Yeah. What would you say is the best advice you ever received?
Best advice. I've been asked that question before, actually, and I said that I said I had a great I had a and the second time when I went over to England to play with Duke Special, we in a house concert, and we were both staying in the house, and he gave we had a great chat for the night, and it all stayed with me. It's like just the fact that he really instilled that you have to be very nice to everybody. It's that whole thing of you got to be nice to everybody on the way up, because you don't know who you're going to meet on the way down, but it was much more than that. It's being nice to everybody, and including like you're trying to be nice to your audience and just the people around you. It can just bring about an easier life, I think. Less grief comes from this if you're trying to be kind of nasty to people at times to try and get things done or whatever. I think just being nice to people around you, because you never know who can help you as well at the same time, is kind of key for anyone.
I think in terms of performance, I always remember advice my dad gave me once. He said to me, "Some people are going to think you're brilliant." He said, "Some people are going to think you're crap." He said, "Ignore criticism and ignore praise in equal measure." That always stayed with me. I suppose you have to be man enough to accept that in this kind of gig, excuse the pun, not everyone's going to like you. That's definitely advice I always
Yeah, 100%
have
with
stuck to.
music.
You'd want to have thick
Yeah,
skin, like.
especially gigging.
Yeah.
Very, very in gigging in Ireland, because you're in a pub setting and anyone can say anything, and if you're not
Yeah.
giving them the tunes that they want in a particular pub, then some things might get said to you. So yeah, thick skin can be very, very, very handy, right? But that is a very good point about you. I've heard that a lot as well about ignoring the praise as much as you ignore the criticism, and I think that can be true to an extent, but then also when you're say working on an album or a CD or something, it can kind of you might not go down that road so much when you're trying to take advice off other people, obviously. But that's a different area then again, I suppose.
You mentioned you might get a few comments there. when you're gigging in a pub? Any come to mind? Anyone that stick out? Awkward moments?
There's always loads. And now usually I kind of have my spots and I have my residencies, and so they usually always go great. But then I might go to an agency for some gigs, and I might end up in a pub where I've never been, and you might get I think what was a typical one might be liven it up or something like that. You know what I mean? If you're two songs into it and you've 2 hours to go and you're like just warming up a little bit, or and you're like you get something like that where, and usually I'll just turn around on them. I know it'd be nice to everybody, but with those kind of gigs, so I know that I don't have to. I'm at a stage where I know I can just not play a place again if I don't like the place, you know. So if someone is insulting to me, I'm also not gonna be nice to them, as like I will stand up for myself, I'll say. You know what I mean?
One I love, it could be after doing 3 hours, you're done already.
And they're only in the door 10 minutes.
Oh, classic. What do you think are your strengths that make you a good live performer?
Confidence is key in your ability, like, you know. No one wants to follow a sheep. You know what I mean? Like if you're kind of very, I mean that in a way, if you're like very sheepish and shy on stage, and just for example, for just like in a cover gig, like this is what I'm, that's, or even more so in an original gig, unless that's your kind of angle that you're going for, like a Ray LaMontagne kind of back to the audience shy kind of performer, that people usually want to follow someone who doesn't make them almost shy and cringe in themselves because of that way. So I think confidence and just believe in your ability to perform and believe in what you're singing and what you're saying, I think is massive. You know, it's important to be able to believe in yourself, to portray that what you're singing about, you believe. And then I think that very often makes the audience in turn, like, they'll like the song more because they believe in what you're saying. They believe that you believe in it. So I find that's, not only is that often where the best songs come from, where you're speaking your truth and something that's like really real to you, is nearly always where the best songs come from. But I think the audience is very, very wise. The audience is very clever more often than not when it comes to, say, an original gig, for example. You're playing your own stuff. They're no fools. So they know if you're bluffing more often than not, they can probably tell.
Yeah, I think people can see through you, can't they?
Pretty quick, unless it's important knowing your skills so you can enact them on stage and bring your best skills to the fore. But you could be very skillful in line on stage, you know, and that's I think in early days, probably some of it is feigned confidence. A lot of the time. Sometimes maybe, but now if it was a massive gig and you're very nervous, you wouldn't try and show that nervousness so much. For myself personally, obviously every artist is different, because some artists might portray exactly that they're very nervous. Now I won't try and hide everything, but I do try and have that confidence in myself so that I can have the confidence in the song, and then therefore the confidence in the performance and everyone else around me. And I think that usually for my gigs will elevate the performance, I think.
Yeah. What's the weirdest song request you have received playing live?
Weirdest song request. There's probably stuff like, I'm sure I got stuff like S Club 7 and things like that in the past, like people kind of half being funny at the same time, but just out of random ones, nothing really is jumping to my head right now, to be honest. But I'm sure there are some particular ones that I've never even heard of. But it's usually some obscure, like, kind of pop song that might be one that would fall into that realm.
I played in Gleason's one Friday night. I said, any requests? Some girl asked me for N-dubs. N-dubs. I was like, are you serious, girl?
I've been asked for Tupac before, but that was only because I was singing Bruce Hornsby. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So then that is sampled in that song. But not that I love Tupac myself, but I don't think I'm going to be chancing him on stage, to be honest.
Needless to say, I did not play N-dubs. Describe your songwriting process. We spoke about it earlier briefly, but let's really get into it.
I suppose it changes over the years. Like, it started off, as I said, I just started writing. Me and my cousin, we said, I think very, very early, maybe 11 or 12. I think he was even into about, let's try and start writing it, because we're both heavily into rap as well. So I think for the first couple of weeks, I think he was trying to say, let's write some rap songs or something. But it kind of just went straight to the kind of classic folk song formula. And they just kind of fell out straight away. It's like there is writing techniques by, say, you know, like I've heard how Damon Dempsey started writing and was taking all of Bob Dylan songs. And so you take the words or the melody of the lyrics and the chords, and then he'd just sing his own words to it, you know. Now, I'd say that's probably very similar how I subconsciously started writing, because I just had these few chords at the G, C, D, and all E minors and all this stuff, and throwing them together and then just writing whatever came down on the page. And when I'm looking back at them, they came out fairly fully formed nearly straight away, you know. So I reckon kind of subconsciously I was already doing that. You're listening to songs and you're kind of, to hear the kind of formula of how it works, and you put it into that. And then obviously the more and more you do that, you can kind of start to develop skills as you go. So I would have been trying to write it with using certain chords to try and bring out certain feelings, and using certain kind of time signatures or even just tempos, different ways to try and write a song, whether, as I said about formulas before, where you have that kind of verse chorus. I suppose I dabbled in a lot of different things and through the years, because it probably is thousands of songs at this stage. I'm over 30 now, so 31 years old, turned 32 soon. So I would know be, what it is, tell me about it. So I'm at it a long time, and because I've developed all these kind of skills over the years, I think now if you'd ask me how I write a song, there's a few different ways to do it. But I usually think people talk about this, you know, flow state, and where you kind of just get into it without thinking about it so much. I think you kind of have to have a lot of the basic skills down really well in order to be able to access that. Whereas you might play a few chords and you're just kind of letting things fall out of you. But then, you know, I do also like to write a song particularly for someone, or, you know, I write a song. I recently wrote a song for our friend, who Carlo, who passed. And when I wrote that song, I had in my head, I'd like a few different bands of, like, you know, Foo Fighters, Jeff Buckley and a few other things. So I was playing chords that they might also kind of play, and the way I was singing would be trying to throw in styles of similar to that, because I was trying to write it in a way that he would have liked it, if you get me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a way of not so writing so much in a flow state, but a bit of both, a bit of kind of trying to write in a certain way, but letting the words kind of fall out of me. And then when you really get into it, you write the song, hopefully usually fast, and then you take it back and you adjust it, and you try and progress it further if needs be, and you fix it, the parts here and there. The process is very different from time to time, but I think some of the ways I mentioned there are probably one of the more common ways that I would approach it. Yourself, were you in any way similar at that?
I can't sit down for an hour and say, I'm going to write a song. I can't do that. My songs have all been by accident. I might stumble across a melody, a chord progression. Lyrics might just, as you said, fall out of me. And I might write it in 5 or 10 minutes. Some of my best songs I wrote in 5 or 10 minutes. I can't sit down and say, right, I'm going to write a song. I'd just be jamming away. And a lot of the time it's by accident.
So that would have been my way as well for a long, long time. And then, as you said, it does get much harder to just sit down and write a song.
Yeah.
But then again, if you're calling yourself a singer songwriter like I do, you have no choice. You have to sit down and work. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a sit down at the craft, and of course, sometimes nothing will come. But yeah. It's just a matter of going at it again and again.
You mentioned Carlo there, of course. I was listening to the Mick Christopher Skylarking album the other day. I always think of him now when I listen to that. You'd miss him. The Monday Jams.
Yeah, miss him terribly. A great, kind and gentle soul. But yeah, we'll remember him fondly forever.
Absolutely. A great guy. Who would you love to collaborate with and why? Obviously, in the intro, I mentioned some really impressive names, but is there anyone else?
Who is yet on my list? I remember a few years back, I was asked by a festival who I'd like to go with, and I asked for Mick Christopher, or not Mick Christopher, Mick Flannery, sorry. Mick Christopher, now there's one I would certainly love to.
Yeah.
But I had thought before that, Declan O'Rourke as well, but then I changed from Declan O'Rourke because I thought our voices might be a little bit actually too similar in ways. I know we're different, but then again, I wanted something that's a little more that we could kind of contrast each other. Maybe a female voice like Wallace Bird, or I think Niamh Regan is great at the moment. She's really making waves. I do like that contrast, you know. I have herself, Leah Hearn, who I can sing with regularly.
Yes.
But take it outside for a collaboration, as you say.
A fantastic voice, Leah, has to be said.
Yeah, she does for sure.
Big question on this podcast. I'm sure you know what's coming. In your opinion, what are the key ingredients needed to achieve high performance as a live performer?
So I would think about that. And again, actually, I suppose kind of nearly touching back on what I said before on the confidence is massive. Now I won't go into that again. I'll move on because it's pretty much the same exact same thing as I said about that. It's just like believing in yourself and what you're saying. Then outside of that again, I think knowing your skills that you have and knowing how to use them and when to use them and not to overuse them, along with the whole confidence and believing in yourself, all mixed in together is for me where I'm at that kind of that peak level of performance where I have an audience in front of me. When you come off the gig and you're absolutely floating and it's incredible, it's happened because everything has clicked, and usually that is also not just yourself, it's also the band have clicked with you, which is another aspect of that kind of high performance, is you've all worked together as a team. So it's also important, I think, for me as the kind of front man, say, to make sure that everyone around me has that confidence in themselves and what they're playing and in my music, that they can also bring to the fore like this believing in what you're saying and believing what you're singing and playing, having the confidence to portray that and express yourself. So it is very similar to what I was saying before, but I think that it's just doubly true. You know, it's really what for me is when I come off a gig and if you were to just ask me about why did that go so well, it's just when things click like that amongst a full group, I think it can just be something really, really special.
I'm interested to ask, would you ever reflect back on a performance?
Yeah. Yeah. Usually. It would be common to. If you don't as a performer, I don't think you're it would be silly not to, really. I think you have to keep improving. So the way to improve is often to see where you went wrong and what you could improve on. So looking back, or also to see what you did right. So I think looking back on the performance can be quite good. A lot of people record their gigs just on a phone on the ground and they listen to it on the way home in the car. I wouldn't usually do that, but sometimes I would do it for an original gig. But yeah, I'd reflect it. I'm not a massively reflective person, I must say. It wouldn't be something that I do a whole lot, but initially after a gig, I do like to think about how that went. Would I have done something differently? And just try to be happy about it. Actually, that's another thing I should probably go back to about that whole high performance is maybe the most important thing I probably left out, actually, is being in the moment. And that's that whole flow state of performing the song and you're not thinking about what am I going to do for this next song? I have to tune down the guitar for this song. When you're literally in the performance and you're singing what you're, as I said, you're singing exactly what you believe. I think in that state, you're truly at your best. You know, you really are kind of bringing out the very, very best in yourself. If you're in that moment, and very often that's when you bring out the very peak performance as well, I think, is when you're in that state of really in the moment, in the song. I left that out, but I think that's important to say.
Two things came to mind there. I think it's important to stay in the moment and not think about what's coming next. Mm. And you mentioned that you reflect on what you did well as well. I think a lot of people, obviously, they reflect on areas that they didn't do so well, or they reflect on areas that they need to improve upon, which is good. But I think it's important to actually recognize what you're doing well also.
I would probably much more heavily focus on that than have a great gig and then bring it down by one little mistake or a couple of little things that went bad. So yeah, but that takes time for sure over the years of playing time and time again to be able to do that. I think you really have to allow yourself to enjoy the moments, but it's easier said than done sometimes, especially when you're younger and starting out.
I'm conscious of time, so we will wrap it up in a few minutes. If my listeners were to go to a Roy de Leicester gig, what can they expect?
So, since before COVID, I brought out an EP. And I did a little tour of kind of the main hotspots in Ireland, and then COVID happened, and I kind of dropped everything for quite a while, like a lot of people did. And I went back to college and music in college, and I'm literally just about to finish that in a couple of weeks. And UCC doing music up there, and in the last year I've really been pushing forward again, new music and writing a hell of a lot, where I haven't been as positive and excited about the stuff that I'm writing in a long time. So I'm really starting to push things forward now again, original music, as I was saying earlier, and I think you'll see me happy at gigs and hopefully the crowd happy too, because I think it's going to be some good and exciting stuff that's to come in the next couple of years.
Brilliant. Any gigs coming up that we need to know about?
no, I think keep an eye out for music online. I'm always kind of gigging around the place, but I'm holding off on the original gigs for the moment because I want to just keep writing and putting stuff together. I want to get things right, and then I might put together a little tour or something like that and start putting together a few more original gigs. But yeah, you can find my stuff online. I'm actually going to start kind of promoting music more online and stuff again, doing a few odd videos, maybe even go on TikTok if I'm not too old to allow me onto it. Make a few songs on there every now and then.
TikTok's the way to go, it seems.
Yeah, you know.
Brilliant. Rory, thanks again for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it was a great conversation.
Pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Thanks again.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed our latest episode. If you listen on an Apple device, please consider leaving a review and a 5-star rating.